right, everyone. Hello and welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr., where we really do focus on building us as individuals, building us as family, building us as community on the local, state, and national level. We do also talk about how to build on the international level. But today, we're going to be focusing primarily on how we can build right here in America, building America up. As we know, we have a lot of challenges facing us, and it helps when we can be given some direction on how to face those challenges. Dr. John Jensen is joining me to share with us some specific steps that we can take in dealing with these challenges that are facing us all. Dr. Jensen is a former Catholic priest. He is a clinical psychologist, and he's an educational consultant who has worked extensively with groups and efforts for social change. He's going to be sharing with us ways that we can bring about positive social change right here in America. We're going to be speaking from some principles contained in this book. We need a movement for problems to solve to restore rational government. Dr. Jensen, how are you doing?
Doing fine, Carl. Thank you.
I tell you what, it is such a pleasure to have you with us today. You, as you know, are going to be discussing a topic that is so near and dear to the hearts, the minds, the souls of us. We could say the heart and soul of America, because it's certainly it is the entire nation, and not just people who are considered to be illegal immigrants who are being impacted by decisions being made. Before we go into the depth of what is happening with regards to these challenges, if you could, Dr. Jensen, allow us to get to know you a little bit better. Could you talk with us about the events in your life that led you to become a Catholic priest, what led you to become a clinical psychologist, and how you later developed this passion for helping us with regards to social change?
Yes, that's a big question there. I became interested in the Catholic priesthood through what I would call some spiritual experiences that I had that really led me there. While I was a priest, I think I was really successful at it. I really enjoyed it. But again, some unusual circumstances led me to think, hey, there's more here. There's more to do. I'd obtained a booklet about organizing techniques called Dedication and Leadership Techniques. Incidentally, it's published still by Notre Dame Press. And it so revolutionized my parish. I was an assistant pastor, that 4 mornings a week, people were getting up at 6:30 in the morning to meet for various needs and projects that they had for the parish. And so I said, my gosh, this is bigger. It can go bigger than just working in the parish. And so that led me eventually to seeking a leave of absence, and then a lot of changes that took place in my life and my thinking. I became interested in psychology, too, just trying to help teenagers in my hometown in Juneau, Alaska. And that also aligned with my getting married and then going on with more education. And I happened to be lucky enough to align with some people that had some groundbreaking ideas in education. One of the very earliest, the Human Development Program back in the early 70s. And that then led me to some other, what I would call breakthroughs in thinking about education. And all this time, I was trying to figure out how to apply in a broader context these basic principles that had affected me when I was in the priesthood. So it's been a long road, over 50 years getting this book out. At times, my rough draft in the book was literally a foot high. I had a foot of paper that I felt that I needed to sort out, and it was a real challenge in thinking and just, you know, what is relevant to people, what really matters, what do people need to know in order to bring about these changes. So that kind of brings us up to the present.
I tell you what, I truly appreciate that overview. It gives us a good handle of what really motivates and inspires you and helps us. It really kind of lays the foundation for where we're going with this discussion with regards to social change. When I want to ask you, when you were working on your psychology degree, I noted you're a clinical psychologist. Was there a specific area that you focused on?
I was in Alaska at the time, and there was really a need for just psychologists, period. And so I was really a generalist. I really handled everything that came through the door, part of the time in private practice and part of the time working in a clinic. But we literally faced everything.
I got you.
But then I think just my interest in education has had a lot of influence in the kinds of jobs that I've had.
So was there a direct connection between your interest in education and your passion for positive social change?
Some of the basic principles, really, Carl, are about aligning with what works in human nature. For example, the subtitle of my the set of three books about education is Practice Makes Permanent. Okay, no skill develops without practice. No skill. And that includes the acquisition of knowledge. And I feel that there are some basic layers of how you apply that that really our education system has not accommodated. So anyway, my set of three books is published by Roman and Littlefield, and you know, is in use here and there. But it really has not gotten the play I would say that it deserves, because the primary problem is that our total system has been influenced by progressive education, which accepted that familiarity was good enough. If you were simply familiar with a subject, that was okay. Whereas all the previous generations believed that you had to actually master something. You had to actually know something well enough to explain it to someone else. So there's a change of attitude, a change of goal that really could make a huge difference. I found in applying these things that any classroom, now I mean any classroom, the hardest students you have to turn around can be turned around in a few weeks if people start to obey what really works for human nature.
So share with us, in a general sense, what human nature is about.
Well, see, there are characteristics that, and this goes heavily into my book, We Need a Movement. People are trained to think in terms of self, family, and my tribe. Who are my people? Okay, let's see if we can defend them. Let's see if we can get gains for them. But the problem with that is that now, in the society we have today, so many things are affected by the whole. In other words, my tribe is not going to fix the rise of sea level. It's not going to fix, you know, that it is going to take over the coast in the next 300 years. It's already, these things are already in motion. So you have to think on a larger scale, and climate change has really caused us, driven us to think bigger. And there are things, you know, all over the world, you know, violence all over the world. Some of these things cannot be handled by tribes or by sectors of the population. The whole critical beginning point is we have to unite our thinking in order to solve problems of a certain dimension.
But
so anyway, that's a start into it.
Yeah. And you said part of the challenge is our mindset is such that we look out for self, family, and the tribe, and it's difficult for us to move beyond that way of thinking to see the whole, the nation as a whole, working to deal
exactly.
with
exactly. You're summarizing it exactly. Right. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so the problem with that, the implication of that is the people that do think of the whole have unusual power. So you think about the Koch brothers and the big money financiers who said, hey, we are going to have a tax cut that really benefits the wealthy. They're thinking in terms of the whole, how the whole country operates on its in the structure of its financing.
Yes.
Now, all of us are in our neighborhoods and say, hey, I got this little dribble of a bonus here, a little bit of raise here. But wait a second, the whole country is now aligned under a system that is benefiting the very top tier. And that, in a study recently by Princeton and Northwestern universities, determined that our country is now an oligarchy, which is a country run by a top class. And that the researchers said that people have little or nothing, the ordinary people have little or no influence over policies. One good example is, you know, the current issue about guns.
Yes.
97% believe that universal background checks are a good idea.
Yes.
97%.
That's amazing.
66% believe that tighter gun laws are a good idea. Now, the fact that Congress can totally ignore that kind of information, that kind of broad brush, countrywide information, says that they answer to a different drummer. They're not answering to what the people want. And that's basically the definition of an oligarchy.
And that's something that seems to be, it seems like more extreme now than ever before, because there was a time when we could listen to the news reports, we could say what, we could hear what they were saying with regards to polls and how we the people were responding to certain proposals or certain laws that were running counterproductive to our well-being. And it seemed like that when people, when the, our political leaders were receiving enough pressure from we the people, they would change their tunes and fall in line with what we were saying we wanted. Whereas now it seems like they're tuning us out more than ever before, no matter how loud
we
cry.
Isn't that interesting? Yes. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. And see, there's a reason, again, you're looking at human nature, and this is important to understand about human nature, is that we are built to push our boundaries. Think of a two-year-old. He's trying every day to figure out how he can do, master more, how can he can be more. And our whole training, you know, what we want for our kids, hey, get more education, hey, learn how to do this, learn how to do that, apply for that job. And so it is... we're built to master our immediate personal universe, but there is no innate built-in caution mechanism that says, "Hey, you've gone too far now. You pushed your power to the edge, and now it's going over the edge, so that it damages other people." And so, this whole idea of thinking about the whole. That means I think about how my actions impact somebody else. And I think about, and it matters to me, that what I do may make it harder for them. Okay, that's a type of thinking that is learned. We have to actually gather that from how people instruct us when we are small and then carry it out into our everyday life. A study noted in the Wall Street Journal several years ago was that 10% of the people working on Wall Street are sociopaths.
Wow.
Well, that's huge. I mean, that's huge information, because it says we can't trust them to know where the boundaries are. Mm-hmm. So as, and I think, you know, the Citizens United had a big effect in this, in that it gave exceptional power to money. And so the money people said, okay, let's see how far we can push this. Let's see if we can just run this country. And we are very close to that edge now, where an authoritarian government could start to take over quietly here and there, and dominate.
And it
people
seems
don't realize how vulnerable we are.
I agree. We don't realize, and we realize that. You know, we don't like the treatment that we're receiving, and a lot of folks are angry about that. But I agree with you when it comes to just how vulnerable we are. I think that when I hear people, and not just our political leaders, but people from amongst we the people, constituents who say,
right,
we need less regulation, particularly right in the wake of the Great Recession, which had a lot to do with deregulation. And
exactly.
Many from amongst us were saying we need regulation, less regulation, because regulation is bad for the country. And of course, one of the complaints being that when those who push for deregulation get it and then make decisions, other decisions, that weigh heavily on us impact we the people who don't have the money to just weather the storm the way they do, their heads don't roll. The big boys basically get away with it because the individuals who made the decisions that lead to the drama don't pay. Their companies pay.
Right.
And so there's no fear of repercussion.
Right. Right. Exactly. No, I agree 100%.
Our guest, ladies and gentlemen, is Dr. John Jensen. He is helping us understand what leads to a lot of this drama. And he's going to be sharing with us ways that we can help do something about the drama. Stay with us.